All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts here in the workshop. In accordance with our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting. Thanks for registering. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection of Nakash Dhammas as a whole. Let's carry the message. Let's carry the NA message, not the mess. What is the NA message? What is the NA message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life, a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that is all we have to give. That no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. Basic text, page 65. But in a way, in Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of an NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. And Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any member of this press are presented, please come to the registration table, where you will be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the unity retreat by the press. If any NA member are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. This is a no smoking in all buildings.
No, I think it's just bigger than me.
Oh, okay. I hadn't looked up. My name is Bob. Hello, everyone. I am an addict named Bob. Welcome to this workshop entitled In Times of Illness. Will you please help me open the meeting with a moment of silence for the addict and still suffering, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Could we have the following reading of We Do Recover at the podium? Or up front.
Hi, Maine. I'm Grace, recovering addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the bitter end, the institution of death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thanks, man. Introduction. Now, the person that is speaking on this on the topic, the first speaker in times of illness will be Dennis P. from the Southwest area.
I'm an addict called Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
First of all, I'd like to thank the programming committee for Roll My Roll House for allowing me to share.
When I got this topic in times of illness, I was like, I've never been sick. The only reason why I say that is because, like, I didn't identify the illness with the disease. And like, after I talked to some of my people in my support group and my sponsors, they helped me to identify one of the problems that I have in this process. I'm real self-centered, and I don't believe sometimes that I have this disease. So first of all, let me thank the God of my understanding for allowing me to get here today. It was a beautiful trip up here. We've had a good time. You know, I've been real nervous about doing this because I haven't been really practicing my program in all my affairs. And like, I've been like, I don't have anything to share. And then they gave me a topic on in times of illness. I'm sitting here worried about me standing up in front of the podium like Roberta just did with everybody here after they ate, expecting me to drop a powerful message. And you know, my peoples, all my friends are like, it's going to be all right, Dennis, it's going to be all right. And like, I'm like, I don't feel God, and I'm just like, I'm carrying on crazy. You know what I mean? But I ain't ill. You know? Over something I've been doing for the last 7.5 years. And it's real ironic that I can stand up here now and immediately I feel the God of my understanding taking control of this and allow me to share with you all, you know, my experience with my times with illness. I came into this program in October 19, 1993. I was blessed to have somebody praying for me while I was out here. I was truly blessed for having loving and caring parents, even in spite of what I may have thought. But when I came in this program, I wanted to stop using, and once I got here, I started following the instructions and suggestions that were given to me. After about 6 months in the program of sitting in the meetings, going continuously every day, not saying anything, I don't know how else to say this because I haven't shared this with a lot of people because I kept it to myself. But I started getting ill, and I mean physically. Like, I didn't know that I was sick because it was internal. What I had was a bleeding ulcer, okay? And I didn't know it because I couldn't, there was no symptoms, there was nothing. I mean, I had indigestion every once in a while, you know, and I'd pass it off, like, you know, you couldn't tell me nothing about angina or anything like that. I started learning about these things afterwards. But, you know, I said, ooh, I just got bad heartburn. You know, and things like that. I wasn't paying attention to none of the things that they tell you to pay attention to when you do go to the doctor. Okay? So, I didn't know. But one day at a meeting, I was sitting in a chair, and it became real uncomfortable to sit in the chair. Right, I was sitting there and I was squirming, you know, and I thought it was just from me just being agitated about being in the meetings, you know, where your disease is riding you and things like that. But it was physical. I mean, I was in pain. Look here, I don't want to get like graphic or anything here, but I was in so much pain sitting in this meeting, I couldn't sit still. I couldn't listen to the readings. I couldn't do clean time. I couldn't do nothing for my home group. I mean, I was sitting in that chair. We got steel case chairs where I'm at. And it was uncomfortable. I mean, physically, like, look, my hemorrhoids were so bad that day, okay? I mean, I had them bad that day. And it really made me like, you know, I got to get up and do something. But, like, once I got home, and after I got to the house, And I did some stopgap measures like we always do. You know, I laid down and I told my mom, I went to my mom and I said, look, I need your help. Because I didn't know how to come to you all and say, look, I got a problem and I don't know what to do about it. Because I didn't think it dealt with anything that we was doing in here about the drug use or whatever. I couldn't understand that, and more will be revealed, they talk about you know, the physical nature of this disease and how this illness, you know, this disease, you know, it will tell you one thing, you know, and you know it not to be true, but you still believe it anyway. I went to my mom, and she, as a result, helped me get through this by allowing me, you know, to be her son that day, I guess I want to say. But anyway, what happened was, I made an appointment and I went to the doctor, and the doctor told me that, you know, you're bleeding internally. You know, we found out that, you know, the acid in your stomach has eaten the walls of your stomach, and you're bleeding. You know, and I said, okay, so he gave me some medication, and I'm taking these Tagamet and these things like that, and I'm watching what I'm eating, I'm drinking buttermilk and things, and I'm feeling all right because I'm not feeling any physical pain like that. Like I said, I just had this uncomfortable feeling when I sat down. But it kept continuously getting worse and worse and worse. So he had told me to come back over at a doctor's appointment again, and when I went back, you know, my mom had went with me, and they rushed me into the hospital when I went to his office. You know, like, I'm just jumping right into this because I don't know no other place to say this, because I just remembered all of the facts about what went on a little while ago once I started coming up here. You know, and it was traumatizing to me because when he asked me to go and give him a sample so that he could test and see if, you know, what was going on, I went to the bathroom and like, it wasn't pretty. It really wasn't pretty, you know. And when the nurse came in and she seen what happened, they immediately called the ambulance and they rushed me to the hospital. And when I got to the hospital, you know, they did what they needed to do, but they couldn't stop me from bleeding. You know, I was losing blood rapidly. You know, my bowels had broke. You know, and I was laying up there. I was a bloody mess, man. I was a bloody mess. You know, and I couldn't tell y'all. You know what I mean? I was ashamed of it because, you know, I can't say, come in here and say, yo, man, my hemorrhoids is killing me. I couldn't do that. Because I didn't have the ability to do it at the time. I had about six months clean or whatever. But, you know, she helped me. My mom helped me in that process because she stayed here with me. She was somebody that I could rely on when I couldn't depend on you all because I didn't know nothing about this support group, the sponsorship, the We of the Fellowship, you know, the similarities instead of the differences. I didn't know nothing about this. I was just here because I smoked too much crack and I need to stop before I lose my job. So after being in the hospital for like 24 hours, you know, they finally got this bleeding under control. And once they got it under control a little bit, you know, the doctor came in and said, look, we're going to have to do some surgery on you so that, you know, because not only were you bleeding internally, you know, you also had infected intestines. Because this blood was sitting in your body. And that's why, as a result of you bleeding and not doing nothing about it, infected your intestines, you know, I was a mess at that point, you know what I mean? And to this day, I really don't even like to share this because for me, as a man, it's not something I want to tell y'all. You know, they had to wheel me in there, and before they got me under anesthesia, look, I did one right thing. I'm an addict. You know, if you put me under, you know, I don't want no spinal taps, none of that. I don't want none of that. Look, put me under, but let, you know, I'm an addict, and I need to let you know this. You know, you're going to start cutting on me. I need you to let you know that I can't take a lot of medication. You know, so he said, don't worry about it. You know, he gave me the pep talk. He stroked me, and, you know, my mom stayed there with me and things like now. In this whole time that this was happening, I never called nobody. I never did those things that y'all told me to do. Because, again, I was scared to death because I didn't know what was going to go on. You know, through my drug use, I tore my body up real bad, you know. But once they got me into the pre-op and, like, they wheeled me into the operating room, I was still conscious. you know. And he was like, well, I would rather do the spinal tap. I was like, no, knock me out. Because they threw me up in these stirrups, right? And I was like, buns up. You know, I don't know about no other man. But I don't like my body exposed, no kind of way. You know, and he was just like, look, man, it's going to be all right. It was a black doctor, you know, and I guess he thought that was going to make me more comfortable. You know, I said, you're playing with my pain. You know, and I'm serious. I mean, you know, look, how can I come here and tell y'all that? You know what I mean? That my... It's rapid, man. It is. It was, you know, I was like, look, do what you got to do. I just want to stop hurting. You know, and I know you can't, look, you can't lose blood and live. You just can't do it. You know, every time I would have a bowel movement, I lost blood. You know. So he went and did what he had to do. Right? They knocked me out. I come around about 3 hours later. You know, I'm looking for somebody. You know, like, help me, you know, because I'm laying in the bed, you know, and they had to put me in a position because of the operation they had to do. So I had stitches, you know. I didn't have no self-esteem. But now, I was like, I'm never going to tell y'all this because, first of all, I ain't got nothing against people with alternative lifestyles. I'm pretty cool with that. But, you know, I can't tell y'all that stitch is in mine. I want to say this. But they told me honest sharing is the antidote to disease thinking. And it's time for me to get up off of that one. You know, I'm better than that. But it was... That was one of the most trying times of my process, and I didn't even know it. I didn't even know it. Look, I didn't pick up a drug. Okay, with 6 months clean, they sent me home, and they had me on a donut when I wheeled out of there, because, you know, I was packed up, man. I was packed. Look, they rolled out the guards on me like, look, here. Take these with you. You're going to need them. I'm like, this is going to be a heavy one here. You know, I wasn't allowed to walk. I was on a milk and magnesia diet for 10 days. He said, don't make a bowel movement for the first 4 days. I said, how you do that? I know what milk and magnesia is. Just what it says. Boy, oh boy. I laid up on my mother's couch. Look, I love that woman to death. We don't get along. We like cats and dogs. I love her to death. You know, she made sure I had a little bit of something in me so that my stomach wouldn't, you know, because I was milk and magnesium. The doctor said milk and magnesium. Now, he said, now, I'm going to give you these Tylenols, but you need to take a couple of these Percodan, because you ain't gonna be able to deal with this. I'm gonna let you know. So, you know, good addict like me, they said, get in the book. You know? And that's what I did. I still wasn't gonna tell y'all, but I said, you know, by golly, I ain't gonna use it. You know? And they told me that serious illness and surgery can present particular problems for us. That's what it said. You know? Our bodies don't know the difference between manufacture, you know, street drugs. Cause see, I had a tooth pulled one time, and the dentist had stitched my tooth up because he pulled it out. I had one of those welfare doctors. He pulled one tooth and pushed the other one. I had to get stitches in my mouth, and he just threw me off like some 800 milligram Percocets. Like, here you go, take these until you get to the store. And I didn't know what to do because, like, I wasn't trying to feel no tooth pain. But I managed to get through that. But like this one, this was some pain that I don't know what it is that birthed a child. But I tell you what, if you've ever had any surgery done on the bottom half of your body, and that pain come back, now, like I said, milk of magnesia in your body does not come out in your urine. okay? I was downstairs. There's 14 steps. The only reason why I know that is because I counted them every time I went up there. Because it was like one, rest, two, rest. Because I couldn't even move. I couldn't even make a normal step. You know, because like I had done some real damage to my body. But after about 4 days of this, they told me that I was going to have to start going with normal natural things. You know what I mean? And one of the things was, is like because of the way they had done the surgery, that everything would heal up and they would dissolve, the stitches would dissolve. And then you had to do this. You had to do this because you had this in your system. And you, let me tell you something. Again, how can I say this without being, because I try not to cut, you know what I mean? I shit on myself twice. And it wasn't my fault. I ain't taking blame for that. It was the milk and magnesium. I used to have a saying that, you know, when I was out in the street, I said, I kick shit down your leg, if you fuck with me. Shit ran down my leg, man. It was so bad, man. It was like, I have never been, like, out of control like that in my life, man. You know. And he said, it all comes from you not taking care of your diet. Something as simple as eating. That's what a disease took me. I stopped eating. I had to relearn how to eat after 6 months in this program. You know, I mean, actually, had to relearn how to eat. You know? And I was like, damn. And I hadn't made a meeting in 10 days. I still hadn't called nobody because I still didn't want y'all to see me like this, you know, especially after I had defecated all over myself, you know. My mother seen me and she said, boy, if you get any of that shit on my guns, you won't have to worry about nobody coming over here. So this is bad. This is bad. Honest shit and stuff. It was. I pray to God, man, every day. Thank you, Lord, for allowing me uninterrupted, being uninterrupted in this process for 7.5 years. Because I've been through some things besides that, but I didn't know that experience was just a precursor to what was about to happen. Through me not getting in contact with anybody in this process, I suffered through some pain that I didn't have to suffer through alone. You know? My mother didn't understand that I couldn't take some Percocet and the back of my legs was throbbing. The muscles back there, them hamstrings, they were just throbbing uncontrollably. She didn't understand. She's like, take notes. Because I know good and well. I mean, I could take 800 milligrams of ibuprofen, but as soon as I took that Percocet and got on that nod, you had to take that bottle. Because I wasn't going to feel no more pain. Once I woke up and I could sit there, and knowing I was numb, you could probably feel it throbbing, but you know it wasn't hurting. I knew that. I wasn't going to, look, they told me, as addicts, we will deceive ourselves. We will deceive ourselves into thinking that we need this, even though we don't need it. And I wasn't going to go through that. I didn't want to use anymore. My son was 9 years, about a year old, and I wanted to see him grow up. I didn't want to be somewhere in a mental institution because I had lost my mind because I didn't know how to stop using a chemical. And I could see that coming because when my baby was born, he was in a neonatal, one of them incubators, because he was born a month early because of the direct result of me and his mother using drugs. And when we went down there to visit, we happened to see some babies down there 10 times worse than he was. And nobody was in there but me and her to see our child. And three nurses rocking these crack babies. You know, and it stayed fresh in my mind. You know, until they told me, reminded me that, remember your last one. And only reason why I remember my last one is because it ran my ass over to West Penn Hospital in a short stay with gauze in one hand
ibuprofen in the other. Couldn't put on a pair of underwear for 10 days because I didn't know when my bowels was going to break loose. You know, as a result of that, once I came back through the process after 10 days, I ran to a meeting. You know, funny part about that is I was catching a bus at the time. And the bus was around the corner down the street, block and a half from my mom's house. I goes upstairs, I freshens up, I get all cleaned up, I'm jacked, I'm ready to go to the meeting because I love meetings. Right? I get to the bus stop, I'm waiting on the bus, I got it timed out. I'm standing there. I think you better go back home, boy. Or something happened. I mean, it was just like because I had to start drinking meals. Then I had, my meals had to be ground up. I couldn't eat solid meat, you know, for a long time. I had to like just eat soft vegetables, you know, just so my body could get used to having these nutrients in my body. I was rejecting food. But later on in the process, after I'd been around here for a while, got a little bit better, I experienced, like this topic says, in times of illness, on the other side, being there for someone else, okay? I am grateful for this thing they call recovery today. I've shared with many addicts, I've shared from the podium, I've shared at conventions, I've shared one-on-one with my sponsors, my sponsees, I've did H&I work. There isn't too many other things that are more fulfilling than to be able to help someone when they're incapable of helping themselves. I sat with a friend of mine in the hospital while he made a major decision that I don't think I had the capabilities of making because I've never been to that point. And I stayed with the brother, even though everything in me told me to leave. He was getting a major surgery done, and when everybody else left, Dennis still sat there. And I waited for him to come around. This is why I don't do spinal taps. Once the spinal tap wore off, it was nothing but pain. There was no easing back into it. It was just like, hello, remember me? Remember me? And it was one of the most excruciating things I ever went through. But I stayed because I remember when I didn't pick up the phone and call somebody and tell them that I needed your help. You know, because of my ego, fear, shame and guilt because I didn't know how y'all was going to look at me because here I am laying on my stomach and can't turn over and I'm like, hey, you know, how do you tell somebody? Well, this is what kind of surgery I got now. You know, will you let me see your scar? You know what I mean? What do you say? You know, but that's the mentality that I had. You know, thank God I don't have it today. Because again, I didn't understand this until I got down the road. You know, and then there I was watching a good friend, again, go through a major traumatic experience. You know, had got peace with it before it happened and made a good conscious decision. Not a decision under duress, not an emotional decision, but a good conscious decision. It taught me a whole lot about how much we can bear. You know? It taught me a whole lot about the person within me. You know, watching him go through, and you know what the first thing I said? Let's pray. In the midst of all of that was going on, let's pray. And I hit my knees and I held that man's hand and I prayed to the God of my understanding to remove some of this pain from this man. And I sat there and I sat there and I sat there. And every time I got up I got right through the door, and he would call my name. He would be asleep. Because see, at this particular moment, there was no other alternative but to go to the narcotics. Because he could not bear the pain. And I watched how even though they were giving them the maximum amount, the pain was so great it was overriding narcotics. And I tried to ease out the door, you know, good dope thing. He's asleep. He alright. He's cool.
by y'all. And as soon as I turn the corner, it is. And I think about that to this day. You know what I mean? We became great friends. We were already good friends. We became great friends behind that. You know? And I have so many other stories because, like, I didn't know in times of illness what was ever happened to me that somebody would want to hear about. Because I had blanked that other stuff out of my mind. Because, you know, I can't tell you about my butt being out here in the open. You know? I pray to God that none of you all have to go through that. You know? Take a suggestion from me. Eat healthy. Don't play with that pizza all day. You know, eating on the run. Because it can still happen. Because I am very aware of the fact that, like, look, I'm only one hit away. Okay? One drink away. You know? And one, like, look, I had bought a pizza the other day, and me and my son was eating it, and it came to me and was like, you're wrong. You're wrong. Because you haven't been eating proper anyway. You've been working too hard. You've been on your feet too long. You can't do this. You know? I don't want to be back there no more, just like I don't want to use the drugs no more. What makes you think I want to go back over there? I don't want that man looking at me talking about, we're going to make it look great. I don't want it to look great. I don't want it to be like anything on my body. Ain't nobody looking at that. Stop playing. You know? We're going to make it look pretty. I was like, you about to get rocked up in here. Because I can come up off this table. I can cancel this right now. You talking about what you going to make pretty. Police. But, you know, it has taught me so much about how much we can be. You know, even though, you know, I hear people say, I don't know what will make me use. Me neither, but I ain't trying to find out. I ain't looking for it. You know? And if I have to go to the doctor, the first thing I tell them is, look, I'm a recovering addict, and you need to know that. So we need to really discuss what type of things that need to be done here, and if there is any alternative. Because I'm a scared guy anyway, and you know, look, well, six is one, half a dozen is another. Either the surgery going to hurt, or the narcotic that you give me is going to put me back out there where I was before. Just because I never popped downers all my life don't mean that I won't feel good off of them after not using for 7 years. My body will react to anything as long as it's moving from the norm. You know? Just like when I brush up against a woman and I get that tingly feeling. But, you know, it's for me today, you know what I mean? They tell me that, you know, to carry a clear message in recovery, you know, and don't put your stuff in it. You know, don't try to make it like you did it. We do this. You know, I'm grateful that I had enough in me from coming to these meetings and just sitting around that I didn't pick up. Because there were ample opportunities to do it. And especially after having what I would say a humbling experience. But because of my inability and my drug use, you know, I didn't know that it was a problem because it was always a stopgap measure that you could use to stop this from happening. You know. But it got to a point where the stopgap would not work no more. So as a result, I had to go up under the knife and get some corrective surgery done. You know. And there's nothing wrong with that today. There's nothing wrong with that. You know. I'm cool. I want to report that everything is working just fine. You know. And it's all right today. But, like, I want to thank y'all for listening, and like, I sincerely hope that you all enjoy the rest of this retreat, and don't pick up the first one. Thanks for letting me share.
My name is Bob, and I'm an addict, and we have another speaker. In times of illness, I give you Leanne from the Pasadena area.
That's the way
it is. You want the water?
No, I'm cool with my coffee. Okay. Good job, Dennis. Hi, I'm Leanne. I'm an addict. I shared about this a little bit already, but I'm going to say it again because it got kind of interesting. I was asked to speak on an entirely different topic when they called me about a month ago. Fear versus faith. And, you know, it's funny, I called my sponsor and said, I got asked to speak on fear versus faith, and she just laughed. She said, well, that's good. That's really good. So when I get up there, the guy says, well, there was a mistake with this and that and the other thing, and we need you to speak on in times of illness. Immediately, I associate that with, like, hepatitis, with HIV, with, you know, I go right to the extreme, you know what I mean? And I was kind of like, you know, I said, oh, well, you know, whatever you need me to do, because that's what you taught me to do in NA, is to gratefully serve in any capacity that I can. And inside I was saying, what the fuck? You know, but check this out. About an hour ago, Greg, the chair of the retreat, says to me, the other speaker for fear versus faith canceled because you have your choice. I chose to stay here. Because the more I thought about it, the more that this is where I need to be. Because I probably really do need to talk about this. My clean date's November 16th of 1990, and since I've been clean, I've been through a C-section, a gallbladder operation, I had two lumps cut out of my head, and most recently, in June, I woke up in the morning, it was June 16th, and I just didn't feel very good. And the longer I was up, the more it hurt to breathe. I wasn't quite sure what was up, but I went to work anyway. And come by early afternoon, I thought I was having a heart attack. My chest hurt so bad. I couldn't breathe right. And I was scared. And it didn't help, you know, I was telling somebody else it's kind of an offshoot to this, but I was adopted as a baby, and one of the things you don't know when you're adopted is any medical history. You know, you go to the doctor and they say, well, does this run in your family? I don't know, you know. I found my birth family this past April, so now I have all that information, and what the information is that my mother had a massive heart attack at 45 and my brother had one at 28. So here I am, I can't breathe, my chest is hurting, it feels like I'm in a bear hug, right? Mm-hmm. I'm having a heart attack. But it's trying to be cool. I drive myself to the emergency room, you know. I get there, and you know, right away, like, I want to start minimizing things. They start doing an EKG, they're doing, you know, all these different tests, and I'm starting to feel like an idiot. I'm like, you know what? There's probably nothing really wrong with me, and they're not going to find anything wrong with me, and my insurance through work ain't hooked up right now, and I'm racking up a hefty little bill here. And then they ran me through this test that shot iodine dye all through my body. Now, meanwhile, mind you, when I went in there, I was a little panicky. I felt like I was going to pass out. They put me in a wheelchair, and one of the first things I said is, I'm a recovering drug addict. I tell any doctor that, any dentist that, and anybody, you know, I'm a recovering drug addict. And I do that to protect myself. Because my experience with the medical profession is they'll give you just about any damn thing, even if you tell them you're in recovery. So you got to watch out for yourself. So they ran this dye through me and found out that I was suffering from something called a pulmonary embolism, which is a blood clot in your lungs. It kills a good number of people. I spent 8 days in the hospital, hooked up to an IV the entire time. When they discovered it was a blood clot, without even asking me, they shot me up with fentanyl. And within minutes, I said to the guy, I said, what the fuck was that? I still felt the pain. I just didn't care. I was high. I was definitely high. And for 2 days until I put a stop to it, they were giving me 2 Percocets and a Xanax every 4 hours. Check this out, though. I'm at Allegheny General Hospital, which is in Pittsburgh, and I know I hadn't been to them for a number of years, but I know they used to have NA meetings in the cafeteria at that hospital. So I went and asked this nurse if they still had NA meetings at the hospital. And she immediately contacted psychiatric services, and they came down and did a case study psychosocial on me. And I'm like, man, I got almost 11 years clean. I am an addiction specialist, okay? I was insulted. You know what I mean? Not only was I insulted, but this is for real, for real. They stopped giving me the narcotics, and I was insulted. I mean, I had asked them to cut down. I said, no more Xanax, please just give me the 1 Percocet. I was in legitimate pain, and you know what? I don't believe in being a martyr because I'm clean, okay? I am not going to suffer. My favorite saying, I wrote it on the table, that pain is mandatory, suffering is optional, okay? We're going to go through pain. Emotional pain, physical pain, mental pain, it's going to happen. It happens to everybody. But whether you choose to suffer or not is an option. And that means in any capacity, too. You know, if I'm going through emotional pain, I can wallow in it. I can put every fucking codependent love song I ever heard on the stereo. I can, you know, do whatever it is I'm in pain to wallow in it. But that's a choice. To suffer. And because I've been through quite a few operation type things, I don't choose to suffer through it. When I was having my baby, he's 2.5 years old, you know, yeah, I'm taking drugs. I've been through this once before. I'm taking drugs. And I ended up having to have an emergency C-section anyway. So I definitely was taking the drugs. But I'm not going to suffer, but you know, I had asked them to cut down to the 1 Percocet because that was too much, man. I was out there. But then when I asked about going to an NA meeting because I'm trying to take care of myself, all of a sudden, you know, we can't give her any more narcotics. And I was pissed. I was pissed. You know, and I'm still not sure what that was about. I was pissed. Because you know what? In a way, check this out. This is what having had, you know, several experiences with narcotics has done for me. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, I don't want to have to ever be in a situation where I have to take narcotics. You know what I mean? Because I might end up using again. That is very for real, for real. But the other aspect of it that fucks with my recovery is I've taken narcotics successfully. And that says to me, maybe you really don't have a problem after all. I got clean when I was 22. So part of me wants to go with, man, everybody parties when they're young. You grown now. You'll be all right. Look, you've managed taking Percocet. You've managed taking Vicodin. You've managed Tylenol 3 multiple times. And you haven't gone crazy. That's where it messes with me. And I haven't talked about it much. This last deal here, when I really realized what had happened, and it was a result of my addiction, was almost 11 years clean. For those of you who have ever taken birth control pills, which I guess is only one person in this room, possibly, two people, the little informational packet in birth control pills says, there is an increased risk for women over 35 if you smoke with birth control pills of stroke and blood clotting. I'm only 33, right? Smoking while taking birth control pills almost killed me. So I quit taking the birth control pills. I'm still smacked. I'm an addict. I am an addict. I tried quitting for 3 days. I thought I was going to kill somebody, namely my 2-year-old. But I'll tell you what, you know, and if that's not enough, you know, this is something, blood clotting is something that happens to older people, right? About a week and a half later, maybe 2 weeks. Oh, geez, 2.5 weeks. Lost a little time in there somewhere. As a result of some of the side effects, I ended up having to go back to the hospital for an intestinal infection that hurt like a mother. And they sent me home with Percocet and Vicodin. And again, you know, it's called diverticulitis, and it's something that affects almost, you know, 80% of old people. You know, I'm 33. And you know what? I ended up getting pissed over all this. I lost, you know, time at work. I racked up a $15,000 hospital bill. I was pissed at my work for making me wait 90 days for my benefits to kick in, and this shit's got to happen 2 weeks before it does. I'm just pissed. But one of the things that I've learned since I've been clean is that most of my anger is born out of fear. I could have died. And it hit me, and it made me scared. It made me scared because of the medication that I'm now on. It's a blood thinner. It's an anticoagulant. Translation, I get cut a little too bad, I can bleed to death. My first couple days out of the hospital and I was driving, I thought to myself, if I'm in a fender bender and get a gash that would otherwise be non-fatal, I could die. It made me feel vulnerable. It made me scared, and I reacted in anger. I just pissed. I haven't been totally on my square again since it happened. That was mid-June. Because I was in the hospital for 8 days and then went back to the hospital, and I was supposed to be on bed rest for a week and everything, I didn't go to meetings for almost a month. And you know what? I've heard this from other people. After they've been clean for a while, the longer you stay away from meetings, the easier it is to do so. I don't even want to tell you how many meetings I've been to since June. The service meeting staff? Now, I need to say it. I've been to one meeting. The one I saw you at Braddock's Monday night. And that was, what, a couple weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
One meeting since mid-June. Been to some service meetings. I call people on the phone, but it has become easy to not get up and go to a meeting. And I don't know, I mean, I can tell you what my excuses are. I have a 2.5-year-old that would, you know, send all of you running out of this room and search for another meeting, okay? He's a real piece of work. Love him to death, but, you know, I fully expect some doctor in a couple years to tell me he ought to be on Ritalin. I don't go to meetings because I'm not taking him with me, and I don't have a sitter, and I don't have this, and I don't have, you know. If I wanted to get high, I know I would find accommodations. Or I would take him with me. So yeah, it's excuses, and I really think, because, you know, like I said, I came up here to speak on another topic, and they asked me to speak on this one, and it's caused me to really think about this in the last day and a half. And you know what? It is. I managed my narcotics successfully today. do I really need to go to meetings anymore? And while that hasn't been a real conscious thought, the more I look at it, the more I think it's there. You know, and I think back, you know, when I had my C-section, I had it in November of 1998, and they sent me home with 30 Percocets. Okay, I took 8 of them over the next 2 days. Okay, so when I went in for a gallbladder operation a month later, she's writing out me a script for 30 Percocets, and I said, you know what, I still have 22 left from last month, and she said, oh, we'll take these anyway. You might need them. That's what I mean. I told these people I am a recovering addict. They want to give me 52 Percocets at that point, you know? What am I going to do with 52 Percocets except get high or sell them? So I didn't pass the second script. I just threw it away. And, you know, I don't even know what became of it. I probably took some of the 22 that was left over from the gallbladder thing. But my husband probably gave them to my mother-in-law or something. I don't even know what happened to him. there's a lot of pain, you know. not for me to say. But again, it's another instance of I can manage myself on narcotics. I didn't feel like using. I didn't use. I used the medication responsibly. I know it's medication. It's not get high. Maybe I'm okay. You know, I tell you, the other reason why I was pissed is I mentioned that I found my birth family in April, and my birth mother, whom I had only ever met once but don't remember, was coming to visit me the weekend I ended up in the hospital. So I had to meet my mother for the very first time laying in a hospital bed. And all the plans that I had made to take her places and do things with her and you know, I couldn't do. And that pissed me off. The one other thing I think I need to say, too, that in finding my birth family, my real father, used methamphetamines addictively until he was 24, and then he quit. I have a half-sister who used crack until she got pregnant and then quit. I have a half-brother who ran with cocaine all through his teenage years until he got out of college and got a real job and then quit. Nobody goes to meetings. Nobody's in recovery. These are my genetic family. Well, then, hell, why do I have to do this? And my father keeps saying to me, I don't know why you want to label yourself like that. So I think all these things are kind of coming together to the point where I ain't going to fucking meetings. And I need to say that. I am not going to meetings. I went to one meeting in, 3 months? That's fucked up. But I'm here. I really look forward to coming up here this weekend. It's not like I'm against recovery. I just haven't really been actively pursuing it. So this is right where I needed to be. I think it's a bunch of things combined that have come together that could be the setup for me to get high again with almost 11 years clean. It's that cocky shit, okay, that I've seen other people go through. I remember seeing this one guy. I think he was celebrating maybe 9 years. And he came up to get his key tag, and he stood up there and he says, yeah, look at me now. And I was thinking, you cocky son of a bitch. Yeah, he's relaxed. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, that certainly not that he deserved to, but it was like, look at me now. You know, it wasn't look at what we've done. It wasn't thank you, my higher power. I've seen people get cocky. I've seen people stop going to meetings and think they're okay and used. And yet, still, I think I'm not going to go there. Because I can stand here right now and tell you, I feel fine. I don't feel like using. I'm having a good weekend. I'm glad that I'm speaking. I am, you know, still doing service work. I'm talking to my sponsor. I'm, you know, I'm still doing stuff. But if I can drop meetings this easily, how soon and how fast are the rest of it going to go? So I'm right where I need to be. I needed to think about this. I needed to say it out loud. I needed to tell y'all, I ain't going to meetings. Because you know what? I do work as an addiction specialist. I tell other people how they could recover. How about that, huh? Only as sick as your secrets. I probably say that 5 times a week. I think I'm about done. I think I said I think I said what I needed to say, and I need to do something different before it's before I lose my choices. Before I convince myself that I'm not really an addict. You know, I remember it was really hard getting clean to begin with, but I know there's people in this room that have some significant clean time, and I don't, it gets harder. I mean, I hate to say that, especially if you're new, if that scares the shit out of you, I'm sorry, but the longer you get away from your last get high, for me, it's been easier to forget how bad it really was. The more I get comfortable with being me and living my life and everything else and becoming, you know, a professional and becoming a responsible, productive member of society, the more I forget what a fucking animal, degenerate, degraded, junkie, street bitch I was. I can be there in a heartbeat. I could be there in a heartbeat. And if I ain't connected, you know, it's like they always say, an addict alone is in a bad neighborhood in their mind. So, I'm glad you guys are here to hear this. Don't tell anyone else, huh? No, don't tell my clients, okay? never hear the end of it. I feel good. I feel good. And I'm glad that I had the choice to choose this topic because, you know, without choices I become resentful and angry and just like I was in my addiction because I didn't have any choices. So it was nice to be given a choice at the end of all this and have chosen the next right thing. Thanks.
I would like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. So we have guests for the day. So when we Maddox named Joe. Just for the day. Tell yourself. Just for the day, my thoughts would be on my recovery. Living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for the day, I would have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for the day, I would have a program. I would try to follow to the best of my ability. Just for the day, through NA, I would try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for the day, I would be unafraid. My thoughts would be on my new association, people who are not using, who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
We have a nice way of closing from a circle and close with the Wee Virgin of Serenity prayer.
Prayer.
Quiet. Okay, quiet.